Chloe Salto here, sports editor of The Age. We have the best footy writers and columnists in the country. They know what's going on at your club and in the halls of power at the AFL. We're also approaching a huge winter in sport. We'll be bringing you in-depth coverage of the Cricket World Cup, the Ashes, the FIFA Women's World Cup and more. This takes time and it takes money, which is why in 2019, I'd encourage you to subscribe. Good reporting needs supporters. Subscribe today for just 50 cents a day. Just look for subscribe at theage.com.au.
This is The Age Real Footy Podcast. Coming up, the Bombers living on the edge. This time, another Anthony McDonald tip and woody bit of magic to deliver another last gasp win. We talk the Tigers' push for the top four, a giant injury, the Magpies delivering in Perth, and what is going on in Queensland. Brisbane defy the critics, while the Gold Coast, things just get ugly. All that and much more coming up.
A lot of pointing going on. That's another one. Out of the mire, quick snap. Another goal to Zorko.
Who can get on the end of this? To the front, Rowan had a little piece. Ablett again. Superstar.
Pulse is racing everywhere. Oh, who else? McDonald. Tim and Woody.
He's kicked it.
McDonald, Tim and Woody has kicked an unbelievable goal.
Hello and welcome. My name is Michael Gleeson, and with us this week is former Chief Football Writer Caroline Wilson and current Chief Football Writer Jake Nile. Welcome to you both.
Caro, Gleese.
It's getting interesting at the top and the bottom, isn't it, boys?
More so at the top, I think.
I don't think it's interesting at the bottom. I think it's just ugly right down at the very bottom. But
still interesting.
What was your biggest one of the weekend?
Oh, Collingwood's win over West Coast. Yeah. That's one of the upsets of the season for me. Everybody thought Collingwood would go over there and were hoping for an honourable loss. That was an unbelievable win. It was an unbelievable win over the premiership favourite, so that was mine.
There were people within the Collingwood building who were not talking up their chances, Caro, that were saying if we get within certain number of goals, they'll have done well. Someone at the AFL texted me after the game and said, 41 points, Jake, which is what I'd predicted the margin.
We will bite in. We'll dive a bit deeper into Collingwood in the second segment.
There was another thriller.
It was another thriller, wasn't it, with the Bombers? I mean, the McDonald, Tip and Woody goal, 17 seconds left on the clock. And to think that it was only the hooker goal three games ago as well, that is an amazing effort. From at that point with the hooker goal, I mean, Worsfold's position was in peril. They've now won three really close and comeback games.
Yep.
That is...
We all felt that he was in big trouble halfway through the season. I'm not sure how it's going to pan out for the rest of the year. He still might not be there next year. But at this stage, you would think if they can continue to play this sort of footy, losing Hurley is going to hurt them. But they get
might help him though.
Yep. And they get Hebble back, which is obviously going to be a massive fillip. Anthony McDonald, Tip and Woody remains one of football's great stories. He had that breakout game against Brisbane at the MCG earlier in the year when he kicked seven and just took the game apart. But he won the game for them, Jake, this weekend. It wasn't just X Factor. He played – some of those goals were –
Well, two goals in particular. I mean, the one where he ducked and weaved was the best goal, one of the best goals of the year. And that was at a crucial point in the third quarter.
The last goal, though.
The last goal was right.
In that right pocket, going away to put it on his right boot the way he did rather than turn on the left. The degree of difficulty was high. And he got it. Like, you know, that a point was going to be enough. Maybe that changes the dynamic of having a shot at goal, that you know that a point will at least draw the game. But to kick the goal.
And it didn't actually do Reece Shaw's coaching ambitions any damage, I don't think. I mean, North were incredibly competitive, looked like they were going to win the game after being down. You've said in your column this week, Gleese, that you still think they should engage, or they will engage in some form of process.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
In the other paper is that he's got the job.
Well, he may well, but I don't think that's what I would do. I think that you should still go through rather than just love the one you're with at the moment. You know, one thing about the game which would cause me to have a little pause with North is Essendon went in with a plan because they know now what game Reece Shaw is going to deliver to them. And he hasn't confronted that yet with the team really researching, going, okay, this is what they've been doing. We've got a body of work to examine now. This is what they're doing. And Essendon went in really well planned. And now they've got to show that they can respond to that. Look, it's a great – he's doing everything right. He looks fantastic. But what's wrong with going through and seeing what else is out there?
I find it extraordinary, Jake, that they make a massive play for the one big fish, or in this case, horse, and which they've done with player after player after player. And then when it doesn't work out, as we didn't think that it would, they then, oh, well, we'll go with Reece Shaw. They've got this committee together. I can't understand why they wouldn't speak to some other experienced coaches and experienced assistants.
I think they will. And I think it's... We've got to look at the counterpoint here. There's just a caution on Reece Shaw, who the people in the club are wrapped with, the players love, and there's a lot of – people are all saying he will be a really good AFL coach. But he is 3.5 years into being a coach. The contrast right now is this weekend they play the Brisbane Lions. Look at the resume of Chris Fagan and what he has done to that football club as a counterpoint to Reece Shaw. Chris Fagan, when Brisbane are 0-8 last year, that's when experience, Caro, comes into it. And that's something the North Melbourne committee need to get their head around, is don't just give the job necessarily to Reece Shaw, test it against other candidates, because he is a very young coach.
Brisbane are a classic example of oldies, experienced oldies. They call themselves the grey-haired men. Someone suggested that if David Noble's wife wasn't a good hairdresser, that he might be grey-haired as well. Just saying. The footy boss, he's done an unbelievable job. He's got lovely blonde hair, but, you know, anyway, whatever. Chris Fagan, Greg Swan, all incredibly experienced. Obviously, we'll talk about the Gold Coast later, but what they should have done all those years ago, it's quite, and we'll talk about Brisbane too, but you just wonder whether North could do with a bit more experience. If they do give it to Reece Shaw, they have to spend some more money under their footy cap on some experienced assistants.
Jake, is it a seesaw with North as far as the better they look under Reece Shaw, the worse Brad Scott looks? Is it too simplistic to look at it that way?
Well, perception-wise, yes, but I don't think the people making the decision. I think Brad Scott, people... Brad Scott's talking to St Kilda or to Carlton at any point in the coming weeks, or if he hasn't already. The point that Brad Scott should be making would be, I stayed too long. I think it's a very defensible position. If he just says, I was contracted beyond the span of my time at the club.
He never really recovered from the Brent Harvey sacking or delisting, did he? I mean, it just created bad blood among... I know Brent Harvey's back there and they're all fine, but you just felt that at that point it was time to move on, I think. And that was a few years ago now.
When will be time for Alan Richardson to move on from St Kilda, which seems inevitable? There was a great sense that if it went calamitously in Geelong at the weekend, which there was a lot of expectation that it would.
Sam McCall wrote that last week.
Yes.
I'm interested in your view, Jake. So there are two diametric views here. There's the Matthew Richardson is saying, I hope he gets the opportunity to coach out the year. He deserves that. He should be treated with respect. The David King view is, it's over. They're not going to make finals. Sack him now, because just don't prolong the pain. At least tell him now and announce it now. What would you do?
The moment that they've made the decision. So once the decision is clearly made that he's not going to be the coach next year, they go to him and his management and they say to him, you won't be coach next year and it is up to you whether you coach out the season. I think that that's it. And generally coaches don't.
Don't you think he's made up his mind? They've made up their mind?
Yeah, I think they pretty much have. Yeah. Maybe a little bit of hesitation around some people, but I would think that, I mean, I don't think, who honestly thinks he's going to be coaching there next year? Anyone in the footy industry? No one.
So, I think it will happen within the next week. I think that maybe after this week's match, when it's no longer, I mean, at the moment you could say there's a remote mathematical possibility of making a final, and therefore if they were to do that, then they could potentially win one. But
and the trigger, does the trigger, so well, there's a bit I'm of dispute about this, Caro, about whether or not the trigger is a factor in when you make the decision, because he can get a contract for 2020 if they win a final. Now, is he being denied that opportunity if there's a mathematical possibility or not? So it might be a matter of 1 week. In 1 week time, if they lose to the Bulldogs, you can say, okay, that's it. There will mathematically, they can't.
There will be certainty around who their next coach will be for next year before the end of this season. So that will either be that they decide we're going to stick with Alan Richardson,
which they won't,
or there will be an announcement that he is no longer going to be their coach, and that'll be made before the end of the season because they have contracts that they have to sign. They have players that they want to sign and free agents that they're chasing who are all legitimately going to be turning around to them saying, who's the coach? Who am I going to be coached by down there?
Here's a random thought. Todd Goldstein would be wondering who he's going to be coached at either St Kilda or North Melbourne.
Well, I think he'll be coached at St Kilda by his old coach, won't he? I mean, Brad Scott must surely be favourite for the job.
When it becomes available, I think he'd be a strong candidate for it, yeah.
And do you agree with the perception? Well, Damien Barrett said this last week on Classified that Simon Lethlean's power base is eroded to a degree because the Dan Hannabury recruitment has been such a disaster to date, and that the chairman, the president, has sort of taken over a bit and he's sort of making sure he oversees everything that happens.
I would just say this. My understanding is that the president is far more forceful in putting his views across than his predecessor.
Yep.
And I think that's a cultural change at St Kilda. And I don't think there's a lot of tolerance for failure from the president. Caro, I don't know if that's what you hear, but that's...
No, I agree. I agree. But they would be questioned. You've got to question that Hannabury deal. And
it was questioned at the time. At the time when it was done...
It just gets worse by the week, doesn't it?
Well, hamstring awareness. What does that
mean? I'm more aware of his contract than his hamstring. But
speaking of
classified, your colleague, talking of training wheels, it was a good week for the training wheels coaches with... not only David Teague, but also Chris Fagan would be considered to be a coach with training wheels on. He's sitting third on the ladder.
I don't think you'd say someone who's as experienced as Chris Fagan.
Hadn't coached senior footy. Hadn't coached an AFL team.
I think Chris Judd made those comments quite deliberately because that is a view at Carlton. And I wouldn't change my view just because David Teague is getting some success at the moment. They're a long way off deciding what's going to happen there. But he said that for a reason. Now, can we talk about the Tigers briefly?
Well,
it was a pretty emphatic win, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In the end,
and it was, and probably the big thing was Tom Lynch, obviously the performance that he had with Jack Riewoldt, because we still haven't seen that combination very much. And if Richmond are going to win the premiership or go close to winning the premiership, you sense that those two players will be almost a compensation for Alex Rance, Caro. That's how I would see it. Is that you have to have something different to win the flag from what you've had.
Yeah, but I'm just not sure that they can get into the top four, because Brisbane winning and Collingwood winning has meant Richmond a full game and percentage out. So they need to get two games. They need to win another two games again ahead of the other two. So it's going to be difficult.
Well, they play Collingwood.
Oh, Collingwood's monstered Richmond the last two times.
They've now just lost Pendlebury. They've got Darcy Moore also out. Darcy Moore's done a hamstring, and he doesn't do short hamstrings. So
they've got the last six at the MCG,
yep,
and some of those games look pretty winnable. I would say they're a serious chance. Like it's not, if they won five, would that would just about do it, wouldn't it?
You would think so. I mean, obviously the last game against Brisbane's going to be telling. And GWS, just quickly, Gleese, they have been crawled by injuries again at the most crucial time. I know that everyone's jumping on them at the moment, but they've lost De Boer. Now they've lost Cornelio. Whether or not he should have played, who knows? Obviously they lost their captain earlier this year. It happened to them 2 years ago in the finals against Richmond when they lost one of their best players, courtesy of Trent Cotchin. I feel for them.
Very quickly, Jake Cornelio, what does it do for him as a free agent?
I don't think it does. I don't think it changes much talking to some people. I don't think the clubs that have got offers in are going to waver, particularly Carlton. Like, you're just not going to see Carlton footy. Carlton can take a long-term view. So I don't think, in fact, it may...
Well, change Hawthorns. They've got, O'Meara, they've got back and he's playing good footy again. Mitchell coming off a knee and then bring in another guy that's off a knee.
I don't think so, because they can get... They can get him without giving up a draft pick.
Yeah.
So I think that's a crucial difference with, say, a lot of other trades for injured players. Like he's a free agent. That makes
we now know he's out for the year. There is something in the mindset of a player that maybe when he's being rehabbed and looked after by his current club that he might feel he owes them. Could that come into it?
Yes. Yeah.
Take a break there, come back and have a closer look at the Pies.
We're online all the time. Just search Age Real Footy on Facebook or Twitter.
Cole, not quite. DeGoey snaps. DeGoey goals. It's a one-point game. DeGoey was brilliant.
Jake, when Collingwood's in trouble, seems what they need to do is going to state.
Yeah, well, I watched the game and you know, in Collingwood Heartland out in Preston, and there was a couple of people around at the pub I was at pointing out that maybe for Collingwood to win a premiership, maybe they need it, the grand final to leave the MCG. They might be a better chance. There was they do tend to play better on the road though, Caro. Seriously. I mean, they've knocked off Brisbane by what, 8 or 9 goals and then beaten West Coast with the team I saw. I could not see it. I was very surprised, albeit early in the game. Brody Mychek,
yeah,
surely the best game he's played. And Mason Cox, again, I thought he should be dropped, and he deserved to be dropped on form. He sort of, he dropped a lot of marks, but he took some important ones. And Jordan Dugowie, you know, his ability to do things. That there was a piece of play, Caro, where he went into the centre square, if you remember this. He did a spin and did a, that led to a clearance. Then he went down forward and kicked that banana goal. There's very, very few players. Dustin Martin would be one. There wouldn't be many others in the competition that could do that.
Well, the other, a couple of other performances that I thought were really interesting were one, and I suppose they come down to the most interesting one was Nathan Buckley, that he actually rung changes to the team, said, well, we're not going to continue to do the same thing. Crisp on the ball, that was probably his best game. He gave them drive and run. He's a better player than
on Luke Shuey.
And held Luke Shuey. Shuey had a good game, but he nullified him in the last quarter when the game was there to be won. But what about Ruffhead?
Well,
can you explain to me why the Bulldogs got rid of Ruffhead?
They saw him as a ruck forward, and they saw Norton and Tim English as their rucks forwards. And they questioned, I think, his competitiveness, which has not been evident with him as a fullback. He's been just outstanding. He'd have to be among those in the conversation for recruits of the year, given what you paid for trades of the year, what you paid for him. I mean, Lachie Neal clearly has been the best player that the club has brought in, but for what you've given up, pick 76, I think
it almost nullified. So they gave 2 first round draft picks for Dane Beams this last year and this year, which obviously wasn't that high, but it's still a first round draft pick.
It's not looking good.
No, it's a disaster. And this almost nullifies it at the moment, doesn't
it? Yeah, well, it's also an object lesson in what makes a really successful trade. And the first point is what fits your needs.
Yep.
And Ruffhead absolutely was a critical need because they played in, you look at those two teams last year, Collingwood played in 2 finals against West Coast with Tyson Goldsack playing on Josh Kennedy, who's a lot smaller. And Ruffhead's close to 200 centimetres, and the difference is quite a bit. But those clubs, Caro, they're building something, aren't they, West Coast and Collingwood? It's got an epic feel.
That was the other one, positional difference that I was going to raise, is that Moore goes off and Braden Maynard moves over onto Jack Darling. I mean, that was... I know they didn't get the service of the ball forward much after half time, but for him to be able to play on Darling and compete, I know Darling had that good shot at goal from the boundary late in the game, but he did really well.
There was a pivotal moment when West Coast looked as though they were going to run away with it in the third quarter early, and then at some point Willie Rioli got the ball at about the 50-metre line and just stopped and hesitated, which is something they never do, and they hadn't done all game. And from that moment on, it seemed that they were starting to doubt themselves. It was quite extraordinary. I'm not blaming Willie Rioli, didn't lose the game for them, but after that, they just couldn't score. It was
weird. Another really important thing in this game was Nick Natanui was outstanding early in the game, and I think he ran out of petrol tickets a bit against Brody Grundy. I mean, they're two of the titans of the competition in the ruck, and Brody Grundy can't jump like Nick Natanui, but there was a bit of tortoise and hare about this. He wore him down, and his influence got greater and greater as the game went on, and Collingwood really wrested control of the midfield where West Coast beat them. It was a little bit of a reverse of the grand final, Caro. The grand final, the territory ended up all in, and Collingwood were trying to hang on from their back line, kicking the ball back in and having it turned back over, and eventually the damn wall broke.
Will it prove the Pyrrhic victory, though, Jake? I mean, as meritorious as it was, and yes, they've turned around their game because they finally started playing like Collingwood again after 6 weeks of not, but losing Darcy Moore and now having to play GWS and Richmond in the next 2 weeks, how damaging for those?
Well, I think Pendlebury's a much bigger loss on the matchups they're going to have than Darcy Moore. For the simple fact that they can play because of Ruffhead. Ruffhead's bailed them out a bit on Darcy Moore.
Jeremy Howe
comes back into the side, so they can get away with that.
Now, that was a great story. about a big club. We'll go to the smallest and really the most irrelevant club at the moment.
We'll make them relevant.
Let's have a listen. This is really disturbing for mine, from what Stuart drew on the weekend.
GWS game, you know, they were in red hot form. Really, really outclassed us, outbeat us. But tonight, you know, I think, you know, look at the Crows coach's box, the last quarter there. So that stings. It's got to sting. That's where we're at.
So last week you've got Brandon Ellis at halftime saying that we're really looking forward to playing GWS next week.
Respectful.
And, oh, it was quite funny, really. It was just clear that it was all over. And this week the comments about Don Pike and his laughing at some jokes so within the coach's
box. Obviously, we don't know what was said inside the box to make them all laugh. And neither did Stewie Jew, but he clearly looked at it and thought, it doesn't really matter whether you're laughing at us. You are so relaxed, so dismissive of what's going on here that you can all just sit around this box and yuck it up amongst yourselves. That's the point we've got to as a footy club, where we provide so little pressure and intensity and interest in this game that even their coaches can sit around joking.
I didn't see this capitulation coming. I mean, I obviously didn't think they were going to get out of the top four, but they showed so much spirit in the first quartile of the season. Jake, what do you do?
Right. Well, I've thought about this quite a bit. The key thing is the priority pick debate, whether they get a priority pick or not, is not a big thing. The most important thing is the AFL have to look at this as a long-term problem, and it has to be a package of measures. And I think, like, do you give them Darwin, for instance, give them the Northern Territory even, you know, maybe give them all of the Northern Territory, but I would give them, you've got to give them measures that help retention and their academy to get players in. And they may need Caro to give them an extra salary cap allowance. I mean, that was the solution to these Northern teams early. They may well have to look at that.
That's going to be the one that will be resisted here. But the simple reality is that they have been having to pay overs to keep players. Players are leaving Gold Coast for less money in Victoria to get out of there. Well, because,
and I just want to illustrate that, Caro. Tom Lynch, who we talked about before, he has been paid the first 3 years at Richmond $500,000. Now it's backloaded. He gets about, I think it's close to $5 million over the last 4 years of a 7-year contract. So he's not being dudded. He's getting plenty of money. But the first 3 years, he's on $500,000. His last 2 years at the Suns was about $1 million. Now that puts it in perspective of what this club is dealing with.
Andrew Swallow, obviously getting ridiculous money. I mean, he's been a serviceable player for them, a good player for them. But it's a similar thing. I just wonder whether it's going to, how many more careers it's going to hurt before it turns around.
I'm not convinced.
Off-field careers, I mean.
I'm interested in your views on this. I'm not convinced that the AFL has had enough urgency around this club and Gillon. I think they've been, oh, it's okay. Is there a real sense that this is actually something they have to go harder at?
No, but I also think that we're seeing the darkest time before the dawn. I think that they've actually already put in place a lot of the things, a bit like Brisbane a few years ago. I think they've put good people in place within the administration that if it's going to be fixed, this will be the administration that fixes it. But it can't be done alone. I think that there's also merit in the broader discussion that they're proposing to have, not just about pick one and priority pick, which is actually a good argument to have at the moment because you've got two guys that are probably the best two players.
And close friends.
Who are close friends, always play their footy together. You get them both up there potentially as a package deal. They come up as mates and they can settle on the Gold Coast together. But outside of the Gold Coast, you've also got the argument, well, maybe it's if you they change some of these other mechanisms for allocation of picks and talent because of they're still feeling their way the league with having brought in free agency. And you've got these clubs down the bottom. Maybe they have to change and say, if you miss the eight for five consecutive years, then you get some form of draft compensation. Or if you're in the bottom four for X number of years, missing the eight is a better trigger for compensation than bottom four. You don't tank to miss the eight. You can tank to sit in the bottom four.
I just wonder, Caro, you covered this extensively when these new teams came in. free agency has come in with these new teams. Yeah. Now, the Giants had the talent to do it, but that is a strategic disaster, isn't it?
Yeah, well, look, it is. I mean, but I think what they were, the Gold Coast themselves said we needed more. So the Giants got more than the Gold Coast got. They had incredibly experienced people around that club, which the Gold Coast didn't have. And so they
were Graham Allen, Mark Williams, Kevin Sheedy.
Compared to Bluey McKenna, Marcus Ashcroft and Travis Old, none of whom had done those jobs ever before. That if only they'd got Brian Cook.
Or a Neil Barm. Or yep. a Jeff Walsh or someone of that ilk who'd been around the block.
Well, I think they still need a season. I know John Haynes comes over from the West with huge experience and probably raps, but I just wonder if they need someone else as well as Mark Evans and John Haynes to be running that footy department, because it is so crucial now that they fix this. It's just, you've got Tasmania in the background. It's seeming more and more unfair by the minute that all this money is being poured into the Gold Coast and resources. I agree about the urgency. The AFL would say there is, but I don't feel it. I don't think there's enough AFL personnel at Gold Coast games when they play their home games. On every measure, this is an utter
debacle.
Has
there been a bit of denial? There's been a bit of denial, hasn't there?
I don't think there's denial anymore.
No, not now. There has been, though.
I think we need this will be a moving story over the coming month.
What jars is that every other team now have got that any given Sunday element about them. Every game is open to an uncertainty of result, except for playing the Gold Coast. There's a certainty around what happens there. Carlton games now, they're back, you know, three wins now for David Teague. They're a competitive team.
Excuse Gold results. Coast aren't. Richmond had an appalling percentage that would have almost certainly kept them out of the top four. They play the Gold Coast. They go from 90-something to 104 or 103, and it changes their whole season. It's going to be so tight in the top eight over the next 6 weeks. If you've got the Gold Coast.
It further magnifies the problem of the rubbish fixtures that we have where they are so compromised. Collingwood plays Gold Coast for the first time in the run home. Well, you cop Gold Coast in the second half of the season when they're all tired and knackered. There's your percentage boost, as opposed to they were losing games by a goal when they lost games early in the season. They were competitive and hard. Now it's a blowout. We'll take a break there. Time for Just Between Us. Just Between Us.
Well, welcome to another edition of Just Between Us. I'm Daniel Cherney, and joining me here in the studios is Anthony Colangelo. Anthony.
Daniel, welcome back from the land of the rising sun.
Yeah, the rising sun as opposed to the Gold Coast suns, who are, well, I suppose they don't have any further to drop, but no, it's good to be back, Anthony. And we start this week with the St Kilda Football Club, who are not going all that well, as we know. But Dan Hannanbury, who's also not going all that well, having missed a few weeks. But we'll take you back to a bit more of a positive note. And before his first game against the Brisbane Lions, he's wearing the number 10 jumper, which is a very famous jumper at St Kilda. Now, just between us, the Saints tried to get big Carl Dittrich, one of the club greats, famously missed out on the 66 Premiership, down to hand over to present the jumper, the number 10 jumper that he wore to Hannanbury before the game against Brisbane when Hannanbury made his St Kilda debut. Unfortunately, Big Carl was unavailable, but they did manage to get him on the phone, and he had quite a long chat to Hannanbury, I believe. He was quite moved. But Neil Roberts, another Brownlow medalist, another St Kilda club great, he was the one who ended up presenting the jumper. But there were a few hairy moments there because Neil Roberts left very, very late to get to the ground, and they thought they were going to have to go or find some sort of alternative means. And Neil Roberts is in his 80s, doesn't have a mobile phone. They were trying to track him down, and they couldn't get hold of him. But eventually he did get there and gave it to Dan Hannanbury, and hasn't that been a success?
Oh, it's good to hear a positive story about Dan Hannanbury and Neil Roberts making it to the ground. Daniel, we all know, well, over the past few weeks, big issue is the AFL's betting sponsorship with BetEasy coming up for grabs. Has been some suggestion that the AFL may not have a betting sponsor, or in fact that BetEasy may not want to be the betting sponsor. But just between us, Dan, on Saturday, during Saturday's Essendon at North Melbourne game at Marvel Stadium, if you wandered up to the Diamond Club, which is the kind of premier hospitality venue,
you sort of strut your stuff, I believe.
I've never been to the Diamond Club, but just between us, if you went up there, you would have seen some senior staff from both the AFL and BetEasy wining and dining. I'm hearing the cognac was out.
Ah.
There was wine and cheese. There was a multi-course meal. And I think the relationship...
That was the rabbit terrain.
I hope there was no rabbit terrain, as Sam McClure found out. But I think the relationship there is starting to be put back on track, as the cognac being open would suggest.
I would have thought so. Cognac, you know who's a big fan of cognac?
Who's that?
Harry Taylor.
Really?
Yeah. One of those quirky footy facts that sort of gets rolled out from time to time. He's a highly unusual unit. Anthony, just between, speaking of Harry Taylor and Geelong, down at the Cattery on Saturday, look, there were some issues with the scoreboard. During the VFL curtain raiser between Geelong and Sandringham St Kilda's affiliate, fair to say that the scoreboard attendees, look, they weren't having a great game. They sort of quite regularly were missing little scores here and there. And just between us, at halftime, the goal umpires had to stay out in the field for, it was probably about 5 minutes, trying to get the scoreboard operator's attention and make sure that the scores were actually altered to correctly match the game. Because at that stage, it was only about a one-goal game. Eventually, it was sorted and all good. But yeah, I think they just, they call it Sleepy Hollow. I think the scoreboard operators might have been asleep at the wheel.
So the goal umpires had to go back to the book and...
Yeah, it was sort of a real old school, you know, waving the, staying out there and, you know, come on, mate, change the score sort of set up.
VFL, I don't mind that.
No, it's good. You want that sort of stuff at the VFL, don't you? You know, that's the whole point of state competition. You know, you're a bit of amateur hour.
That's it.
Anthony, it's been fantastic to have you, and just safe travels to our good friend Sam Scoop McClure as he goes off to Scandinavia.
Don't get sunburned in European summer, Sam.
Knowing him, he probably will be. Just between us.
Just between us.
Ball is stung in low. It'll bounce, it'll roll, and Eddie will just volley it out of the air. Help himself to his fifth.
Reports of the demise of Eddie Betts have been premature. Well, I suppose, who were they beating? But it was a welcome back for Eddie Betts.
And welcome back to Friday Night Football. Another great game coming up this weekend with Essendon Adelaide. Again, well, sort of an 8-point game really, isn't it? Because they're both trying to stay in the eight. Adelaide have got a great run home. And if Eddie can find some form, well, fantastic.
And a bit, we touched on it earlier, but the Hurley injury, magnificent win for Essendon. But you wonder, Jake, at what point does that depth get tested too far? You know, Danaher's out, Devon Smith, Heppel, does he come back from the foot? Now they're losing Hurley. It's and Bell Chambers on top of that. So they're going to have questions to be answered, particularly playing with Adelaide with their tall forwards.
Yeah, well, Taylor Walker, I mean, I just look at the matchups, go through your mind straight away. Hurley would probably have played on him, and now Hooker would play on Jenkins, I would imagine. How they work that, it'll be quite difficult for Essendon. They might play Francis, a South Australian.
Hartley
might come in, yeah. So Essendon have done very well to cover the players that they've lost. That's a massive game. It's one of the bigger games of the run home in the last 6 weeks.
It is. Now, I want to talk about the other Adelaide team. You know I'm a massive Ken Hinckley fan. He's got massive egg on his face today after his comments before the game on Sunday when he... to paraphrase, talked about planning to monster or target Lachie Neale with a smile on his face, a smile and comments not lost on the Brisbane hierarchy, I can assure you. And Chris Fagan, unusual for him, had a minor crack back at Port Adelaide after the game. It was embarrassing. I mean, they're clearly no good at multitasking, the Port Adelaide players. They targeted Lachie Neale all right, but they forgot they had to kick goals.
Well, the monstering was... by the Brisbane Lions on Port Adelaide.
It was,
and that Port Adelaide up-down thing continues, Caro.
Nine weeks
of win-loss, win-loss.
Doesn't bode well for the Tigers this week.
well, I know it always comes down to Richmond. But
but seriously.
No, that's true.
It's front of mind for them. All last week they talked about the two in a row. They didn't over-celebrate the victory against Adelaide. It was an unbelievably good win. But it often goes against the grain, those showdowns, or against the run of play. And maybe that's happened again. I just want to say again that he was punched in the stomach at the first bounce or before the ball was bounced. Why didn't the umpire pay a free kick? Why do the umpires allow this stuff to happen? I'm talking about Lachie Neale.
Yeah, because they don't see it. If they see it.
You couldn't have not seen so many of the incidents involving him. And we were told at the start of the year, this sort of mindless thuggery no tolerance to punches off the ball and whacks. And even though that they might seem insufficient, we don't like it. We don't
Ben
want
Cunnington
it.
Does and it then it three happens. Times in a row.
How did they not see it? They were keenly broadcasted before the game. It was clearly in their planning all week. It was so obvious what was going on immediately. And the commentators don't help. I mean, I watched the game on Fox. Dermot Brereton's having a crack at Lachie Neale for going off or putting his head down. He'd been poked in the eye. He had blurred vision. I was staggered by the response.
And I did like
tactic.
Should there be an investigation?
Well,
what's it going to find?
The problem is that they were so humiliated that everyone's sort of laughing at them and, you know, scoreboard. So I don't reckon Brisbane will forget. I don't think Mitch Robinson will forget from some of the body language I saw next time they play them.
In retrospect, Jake, it's a reasonable point to say you sent players out there to do deliberately unsportsmanlike and illegal things on the field. Should there therefore be a reaction to coaching that way?
Well, it's not great. It's not a great look for the game. But having said that, as Caro said, the scoreboard is Port Adelaide and Ken Hinckley are embarrassed today.
It wasn't a great advertisement for targeting a player. And then you had Ross Lyon, after Fremantle's yet another defeat, saying if the umpires don't start looking after Nat Fyfe, we're going to have to take matters into our own hands. And I can't imitate Ross Lyon, but you know how he talks. Oh, don't say these things lightly. What's that all about? What's he saying they're going to do?
Well, I sort of get it because you see what happened to Lachie Neale, and he wasn't looked after by umpires. And the players have to try and step in to do something to stop it.
Which they did.
They did. They had a Mitch Robinson trying to do what he does. And evidently, Ross was upset that his own Fremantle players didn't do that under instruction because you'll just give away a free kick. Well, he's saying now, if my players do something to defend Nat Fyfe, well, far be it for
what
you
realistically can you do?
Nothing.
That's the thing. What take matters in our own hands. What does that actually mean?
Well, it
a bit
means
of buffeting off the ball.
Well, play the way Ross Lyon used to play, which quite frankly
physical.
Was terrifying.
Yeah, terrifying. Run into him.
Will he be interesting to see what he does at selection this week if there's a hitman brought in? I'm not sure who he's got.
I really think that the game's officiators need to do more, though. And I mean by that the umpires. You need a strong statement from Steve Hocking. I don't think what we saw on the weekend, just because they're embarrassed, you want a coach saying they're going to monster a player and then punching him in the guts before the first bounce and continuing to target him really on the boundary of rules.
Pretty old school.
Yep, it is.
I did like the understatement of Chris Fagan's response, though. It was in line of, you know, there's two teams out there and only one of them's playing cricket. You know?
No, he certainly wasn't happy, though.
We'll take a break. Coming up, quick questions.
Get access to every episode as it drops. Hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Umpire says play on as it spills the way of Curnow. Hacked out of there for a wonderful goal.
Welcome back to Quick Questions. The Blues, Jake, should David Teague be considered for the senior job?
Considered, yes, but I think it's I wouldn't be rushing to appoint him. I think they've got to stick with their process, and everything I said about Reshaw applies just as much to David Teague, and that you need experienced people.
So, quick supplementary question. Given that Chris Judd has declared the hand on training wheels, should he bother applying?
Yes. Yeah. No, because he's... Didn't they kind of fiddle that and sort of say, oh, he's off training wheels because he's actually doing the job? He's actually been in the system quite a long time. He's been about 10 years as an assistant coach, and he's coached his own teams. So considered, but I think he's up against it.
I think Brendan Bolton felt that he was pretty keen on having a crack at the job when they were working together.
Oh, well, that's not unusual, Karen.
Glenn Bartlett last week said that Melbourne's season this year is the outlier, not last year when they made the finals, and said that we're on top of the injury ladder. Do you believe him in that, Karen?
Well, I dispute the injury ladder is just, I just dispute that completely in terms of important players to your structure. Melbourne have been really disappointing. I know a few people bagged me for saying they over-celebrated last week, but the comments that last week's win over Carlton was a season-defining win were frankly...
Who said that?
Ridiculous.
Who said that?
I think Angus Brayshaw said it in The Age last...
The season was shot a long time ago.
Well, season defining as in, you know, this is that we can build on this and this will be the start of something. I mean, I just think that they went a bit over the top, even though they only had one man on the bench and Carlton were playing well.
Did Bob Murphy get it right with his column last week, Karen?
I love the column he wrote in The Age last week. He basically said, Jake, that it wasn't a hangover after they won the flag and failed to make finals 2 years in a row. He didn't use these words, but more an identity crisis. The Bulldogs, it was just something so foreign to them. They didn't know who they were or how they were meant to behave.
They lost their purpose because they'd won the Holy Grail and they didn't know what to do.
Well, they, yes.
Is it like that scene in that film, The Candidate, where Robert Redford says, when he gets elected, what do we do now?
I remember that, the last scene of the film, great film. Well, I heard Peter Gordon talk about it on the weekend. He loved the column and congratulated Bob on it and felt he'd nailed it. And I think
I reckon if one of us had written it, he wouldn't have viewed it as well.
Certainly not me. But I think that, well, I mean, Bob Murphy is, even though he didn't play in that premiership, he was so influential in it, and maybe he's still being influential at that club. They're on a roll. They have still a chance to make the eight. Hopefully they do, because they're playing some great footy, and I'd love to see them in the finals. But I think that it's really interesting that maybe, according to Bob, they've worked it out now, and now it's all upwards.
3 years of recovery from a flag.
Well, one win and percentage out, they could even get there after this.
The way they're playing, they definitely could.
That's all we have time for this week. Thanks for coming in, Caro and Jake. Please rate and review the show wherever you find your podcast. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us via email, realfootypod@theage.com.au. Thank you to Fox Footy, Channel 7 and the AFL website for the audio we've used this week. We'll catch you next week.